going to ask you now to, in a way, step a little bit away from your job and your role here, but to reflect as a human being on this experience. You came from, as you said before, a national jurisdiction where you might be investigating one murder or two murders, or, you know, now you have been exposed to mass atrocities. You have been working, investigating. You know as much as anyone. I mean, you are here in Kigali. You have seen evidence. You have heard so many stories. How do you feel this experience has affected you as a human being?
We've asked, you bring me back to a question we ask quite often. How and why did this happen? Because within the process of investigations, we've come across some of the techniques and procedures used in killing. They're killing with machetes. Rwanda was under an arms embargo, so they didn't have sufficient weapons and bullets to use, so bullets were maintained for the war. And so they were trained to use local instruments to kill. And they killed extensively. In fact, if you go to some of the memorial sites here, where I've had time to go as an individual to see some of them, and explain to you what was being done, you feel very, very touched. And sometimes you say you must go further. If you go to Nyamata, for instance, the church there where I was shown an indelible spot in the wall where, rather than use weapons to kill children and babies, they were held in the Achilles tendon and the heads, the skulls, fractured on the wall. If you go down south to Murambi, it's a big school there, and you see a number of bodies, quite a number of them. They're still, I don't know how they preserve them, but they're rather mummified. Flesh is still on them to this day, and you see how many of them were killed there. If you listen to some cases where the killers were tired of killing, and for fear that they may leave the victims to escape if they were not maimed on the spot. And so they used machetes to cut up their Achilles tendon so they could stay immobilized for late, they could be killed the following day. Or you found people who wanted to have a hasty death rather than wait to be killed in this gruesome manner and paid for the bullets that was used to kill them. They were going to die anyway, where they preferred to use money, which these people could get, even whether they killed them or not, but they still took the money as payment and used the bullet to kill them. Now, all this seen together, and this I always say when they come to the providing counsel for our witnesses, for trauma counseling, I say the investigators themselves are trauma patients, because some of them have seen a lot of things. They may not immediately realize them, but when they do move away from here, it may have that silent effect of eating back into them. I even think that some people may actually dehumanize life from seeing so many deaths or seeing so many people. So many deaths, they no longer have that shock of meeting a corpse, which is a general feeling of most people who are brought up in a decent society. So, as a person, this has affected me a lot. I know of people who've led to certain sites that they've seen corpses or bodies, and they swear they will never eat meat in their lives. So that is an effect of its own. Otherwise, yes. But I also do think, on the other hand, that the experience and some of the things we've known to have been causes of what happened in Rwanda could be communicated to other societies where they have the same seeds of discord. I even think, when I think of it in hindsight, I believe that my country, Cameroon, averted a similar genocide only by circumstances. Rwanda has a community of, I would say, three distinctive ethnic groups. And so they could easily be pitched against each other. In my country, we have about 250. Just by number itself, they cannot be pitched against each other. But some of the things that happened here prior to the genocide happened in my country, using the state radio to incite people to harm people of other society, of the other ethnic group, send them away from the capital, accuse people, and even when a few upheavals come up, you actually find people being bodily affected or maimed or killed and so on, but not to the extent of here. Maybe one or two people, but you see the germs. Because I do remember following the radio back home. So these are things which politicians can avoid. And I think humanity itself should avoid in fragile societies, because it may not necessarily happen in the West. Though, if you look at the Nazi, we would say it happens if you have another Hitler to come up somewhere. But in fragile communities like the Third World, especially Africa, where politics is not a disciplined profession or disciplined activity, people don't seek support through ideas. They seek support through their ethnic alliances. Now, you would always have that. You may always have that, because once in power, and since your power base is your ethnic group, you may sometimes, you know, be victim of some of the things that are said and done around you. These are some of the things I think may affect others. And I still think that in most African countries you have that feeling, that urge. You don't have national personalities and authorities who think beyond their ethnic or regional alliances. So, but with time, if people are sufficiently educated, we may overcome that.
I hope you are right.